So what is the process we're conducting today? Gel electrophoresis. And electrophoresis is a separation technique, one of many. What other separation techniques have we talked about already? Centrifugation is a separation technique. That's based on mass, right? You spin things and the heavier things go to the bottom and force the lighter things up above them. That separates things. That's one way of separating things. Distillation is a separation technique. This is how you make booze. You know, you start out with fermentation, using organisms that are fermenting to produce that alcohol. The alcohol can only build up so much before it will kill the organisms, which is why wine is all pretty much the same alcohol content. It's about as strong as you can make it without killing them. If you want to make it stronger, then you distill. It's not the only reason you use distillation, but that's an example. Distillation, though, is separation of things based on those different things having different boiling points. So you gradually heat the thing up, and the thing with the lowest boiling point comes off first, and then the next one, and so on. That's distillation. Electrophoresis is separation on a different basis. Electrophoresis separates things on the basis of size, shape, and charge. But of those three, charge is, in a sense, the most important. And that's because we use a gel that you just loaded, which have wells in it, and then we apply a voltage across the length of that gel. So one end will be positive, one end will be negatively charged. And the reason I say charge is really important for electrophoresis is that if you have a collection of things you want to separate, but none of those things has charge, then none of them will move when you apply a voltage. At least some of them have to be charged particles, because only then will they move toward one pole or the other, namely the pole that's oppositely charged compared to themselves. If they're all neutral, then you need to look somewhere else other than electrophoresis. Nothing will move, right? If you do have a collection of particles, though, at least some of which are charged, then any negatively charged particles will move toward the positive pole, the positive end of the gel, because opposites attract. Any positively charged particles in your sample will move toward the negative end. And anything that's not charged will just stay put in the well. When you make a well, like I said, you pour liquid and have it set up. But you use a comb, which is what I removed when I was processing those gels. While it's still in liquid form, in the little box you pour it in, you put the comb, which looks kind of like a comb, into the liquid, and that's what forms the wells. Then you just take that out and you have the wells in the gel. Well, when you make a gel, you don't necessarily make it the way that gel is that you just loaded. You could put the comb anywhere. So you could have the wells in the middle of the gel rather than at one end. When would it be appropriate to make your gel that way? Why would you want to have the wells in the middle? Right. If you don't know which way the particles are going to move, or if they could move in either of two directions. In other words, if you have a collection of particles, some of which might be positive, some of which might be negative, then you need to have room for them to move either direction. Right? And that will still separate them. But we didn't do that. We were confident that all of our particles were going to move in one direction only. And that's because, even though we don't know what the sample is specifically, and that's why we're doing the electrophoresis, we know the nature of the particles. We know that they're DNA in all cases. The DNA is different in different samples, but it's all DNA. And so why do we know that DNA is always going to move in the right, in the same direction, regardless of the sequence? Why? Right. All DNA, of course, is made up of nucleotides. Every single nucleotide, by definition of being a nucleotide, has a phosphate. Every phosphate group has negative charge. So all DNA from any sample is negatively charged, and therefore DNA in an electrophoresis gel is always going to move toward the positive end. And this is why you have to be careful, or why I had to be careful, putting these wells in there. If I put those wells in backwards so that the wells are at the red end, which is positive, then the DNA, you know, that would be like this, but my wells would be at the positive end. If I did that, then the DNA would move this short distance and go right off the well, right off the gel, I mean, right off the end of the gel. So you have to make sure the DNA is situated at the negative end so that they have plenty of room to move toward the positive end. And that's what electrophoresis is. You apply the voltage and you give it some time. It's a lot like a race. All of the particles in the sample, all in one well, that's a mixture of particles. It's a mixture of particles. They are all starting at the start line of the race. But they move at different speeds. They won't move at all. Go ahead.
Does that have anything to do with what you're going to say, the size of them?
It's where I'm headed. They won't move at all if they don't have any charge, but we know DNA is all charged. So all of the particles are going to move and in the same direction. But they're going to move at different speeds because of the other things that electrophoresis separates on the basis of, which I said were shape and size. This gel is thick, very viscous stuff. So imagine trying to walk through a swimming pool with the water up to your neck. You're not going to be able to walk nearly as quickly as you can in air like we're used to, right? That's one thing. But also, the bigger you are, the harder it is to get yourself through that gel. And that's why size matters. And also, if you keep the size, you know, if you're just the same person, you're the same size as yourself, of course, but you can slow yourself down by spreading yourself out, right? So shape also matters. Shape and size determine the speed. And this is why it's a separation technique, because if they all moved at the same speed, it wouldn't separate anything. It would just move the sample to another place, right? They're all moving at once, as soon as you apply the voltage, but they're all moving at different speeds if they are different sized particles. And importantly, the larger particles are going to move slower. So when you finally, at the end of the trial, see bands, if there are multiple bands in the same lane, each band represents not a single particle, because it would be invisible, but millions of particles that are the same exact size, millions of copies. And they therefore are all moving at the same speed, and there's enough of them for you to see it as a band. This is a lane. You have some number of bands within a lane. A lane corresponds to a well. Okay? But if you have two or more bands in the same lane, what I'm saying is important to realize, and because sometimes it's backwards in your head when you think about it, is that the bigger ones don't move as far. So the farther ones, the ones that move farther from the well, are the smaller ones. Always. Okay, now, you use this electrophoresis technique anytime you want to separate things that are charged. Specifically today, what we want to do is try to figure out what your samples were as far as sex of the owls that the DNA was taken from. I didn't mention this last time when we did the PCR, but PCR, although it's an amplification of DNA, like we were talking about, it does not amplify the entire amount of DNA in your sample. It looks for a specific sequence within that sample and makes copies of just that sequence, not the entire piece of DNA. And the reason it's able to look for a specific sequence is because the ingredients that I added, remember, which are the raw materials needed for it, includes primers that are complementary to a specific sequence that you know is in that DNA somewhere. That's where the copying starts, not the whole DNA. So in the owl DNA, the primers were set up so that it was looking for a piece of DNA in the sex chromosomes. And in birds, it's kind of the opposite of humans. In humans, a person with two of the same sex chromosome is female, and a male is one of each. It's just the opposite for birds. Two of the same is a male, one of each is a female. And instead of being called XY, they're called Z and W. Well, the little piece of DNA in that sex chromosome, which is what your sample was from, is of course going to be the same size in two of the same chromosome. But if you have a Z and a W, the fragment that it finds is a little slightly different in size. Which means if you have two bands, that means it was a female. Because the Z fragment is a little bit different in size. You can see this on page 146. The fragment on the W chromosome, if you have a W chromosome in your owl, in other words, if it's a female, is a little bit smaller, as you see. So this one would be the W, this one would be the Z. If you have a male, that means it's a WW, it has two W chromosomes, I'm sorry, two Zs. And those are the same size as each other, so you won't get two bands at all. You would get just one band, but it would be at the same position as the one that goes farther in a lane that features female DNA. Does that all make sense? So that's really all we're looking at. It's a demonstration of the technique, electrophoresis, but you should also be able to tell whether your owl was male or female, depending on whether there's two bands or one. Now, during the trial, if you came up here and looked at it right now, you won't see any bands. And that's because they're invisible to our naked eye under these lighting conditions. That's why, so you have no idea where the bands are. The bands are separating from each other. They're in the lanes right now. You just can't see them. Well, you don't want to run this thing so long for them to go off the far end either. If you apply the voltage for too long, they'll just go off the gel the other way. So you would lose everything. On the other hand, you want to run them long enough so that it gives it a chance to separate so you can clearly see that they're separate bands. Too short, two bands are going to look like one still because they're right next to each other. So that means for best results, you want to adjust your time so that you let it run long enough for the smallest one, which is the band that goes fastest, to get almost to the end, but not quite to the end. Okay, that gives you maximum ability to discern them, to tell them apart. But they're invisible. That's why you have the loading die. The loading die is visible under normal light. That looks orange. And it also is smaller. The pieces of the die, the individual molecules of die, are smaller than the smallest piece of DNA you're going to use. And therefore, the dye, which the line of orange that moves, and you can see that it's no longer at the wells, it's already moved away from the wells, that dye front is winning the race, so to speak. It's in front of all the DNA. So it allows you to keep an eye on it and run it long enough so that the dye gets almost to the end. As long as the dye is still not off the gel, you know that all the DNA is still on the gel behind it. Then, once you stop the trial, turn off the electricity. You can put it in this transilluminator, which is really just a box with an ultraviolet lamp in it. Ultraviolet lamp is dangerous, which is why it has a safety switch. You can open the door, it'll just automatically turn the light off. But anyway, this is what we're going to put the gel in, one at a time. You can only look at one. Put your gel in this, turn on the ultraviolet light, and that will cause, because of the way it was prepared with the gel ingredients, the gel ingredients have an ingredient that will make it glow only in the place where there is DNA. That's why the bands will glow under this, but they're invisible right now. And so sometimes this works well, sometimes it doesn't, like all real science. You know, the main reason it takes so long to get a PhD is because most of the time you're redoing experiments rather than just doing them. But things go wrong usually. So don't be surprised if at least some of you don't have results. That's no big deal, as long as you understand the process. Hopefully, though, we'll get some bands, and you'll see that on the screen. Let me see how... I tried to speed it up a little. I put it to 120. Now, you don't want to give it a million volts, because it'll just explode the gel. And you don't want to get it too high either, because identically sized pieces, because it's such a high voltage, will start moving at slightly different speeds, and instead of getting a nice distinct band, you'll kind of get a fuzz. But 120 is usually safe. It speeds it up a little bit, although I didn't talk enough for it to be done yet, so we still have a little bit of waiting before we look at them.